98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Doug and Wolf react to yesterday's D-backs game. D-backs Daily. Brought to you by America Roofing. Honored to protect your family as the number one roofer in Arizona. Online at AmericaRoofingCo.com.
Mad Bum on the Hill. There's your ace. You're excited. Let's get this thing fixed yesterday. Only four batters in the first inning. That's good. Problem is, one of them's Altuve, who's been terrible this year.
He swings and he hits one to deep left. Back on it goes Varsho, and on two pitches, it's 1-0 in favor of the Astros. Altuve has hit his second home run of the year. That one deep into the bleachers in left center.
Ugh. Madison Bumgarner was bad, Ron Wolfley reported.
But don't worry, it's just one run. You're okay. Top half of the second inning, first batter.
Here's a drive into left center. That ball's tagged. Marte looks up, and this ball is going to get out of here. So solo home runs by Altuve and now Correa, and it's 2-0 Astros.
And they weren't even close to being done as Mad Bum hit two batters in the inning and gave up a second hit before George Springer came up and had a sack fly. So it's 3-0, and the Diamondbacks showed a little bit of life from a guy that has not hit the ball well.
3-1 count. Escobar digs in. And he swings, and there's a base hit to right. Calhoun will come around to score on his way to third. Walker. And Eduardo Escobar delivers an RBI single. It's 3-1.
So you got runners on first and third, and the team tied for the most grounded into double plays this year. Peralta grounds into a double play. Thank you very much. Inning over and comeback thwarted.
It was a hard hit ball by David Peralta, right? And just going back to Escobar and Cole Calhoun, those are two guys that have to get going for the Diamondbacks.
Mm-hmm. And then in the fifth inning, you get a ground out to start and then a double. Things aren't good, but don't worry. You walk Carlos Correa, Reddick's at the plate, and you're kind of thinking, oh, comebacker, here we go, get out of this inning.
The 1-2 and a chopper. Bumgarner's got it. He'll throw to second, and he throws it wild into center field. By Ahmed, one run will score. Correa will go to third. And the Astros get that run back, and it's 4-1.
So what could have been out of the inning, Wolf, ends up by the end of it all is a 5-run inning.
Yes, Mad Bum was bad, and what I love is he also is very accountable, admitted as much after it.
Yeah, it was a struggle. And from there, it hurt as the Diamondbacks continued to do nothing until very late in the game where they had a little bit of a comeback. The highlight, Mad Bum stunk in that game. The offense stunk in that game. And the manager pulled his players in the sixth inning. That's your D-backs Daily.
You've been listening to D-backs Daily on the Doug and Wolf Show. Brought to you by America Roofing. Honored to protect your family as the number one roofer in Arizona. Online at AmericaRoofingCo.com.
You mentioned it, Wolf.
I don't know. I just wasn't very good, to put it bluntly. Just seemed like I couldn't get anything going for us. And that can't happen, especially in a season like this one. But the one that's going to wear on me the most was the throwing error more than any of the pitching stuff, because we're out of the inning right there.
That's a big point of the game. Listen, you can't give up solo home runs, but when you give up in a home run to an MVP type of player in Altuve and a really good player in Carlos Correa, crap happens. We know it can happen. You move on. But that goes from a still 3-1 game to now you're done. I mean, you're out of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Douglas. To me, once again, the fact that Madison Bumgarner got up there and actually said it the way that it was, without sugarcoating it in any way, shape, or form, wasn't offering up all these excuses or reasons why, just admitted the fact he was bad and that can happen. That is modeling in terms of being a leader inside that clubhouse, and that's what he did. Listen, it's one of the reasons why it gives me hope that Madison Bumgarner is going to come out of this. He was good in his first two starts. He was good, not great. He was good in his first two starts. This was bad. Now what are you going to do?
Madison Bumgarner was asked, does he feel like the team is trying too hard? They just trying too hard.
Man, I hate the saying trying too hard because to me, I don't – how can you try too hard? You know, I know what you're saying with depressing and putting too much pressure on yourself, but I don't look at it that way. You know, I'm trying as hard as I can to get everything dialed in and get it right and to get where I want to be. And I think everybody's doing the same.
Man, I love that as well.
I do too.
I really do. Mad Bum is it's the way a cowboy would approach this, mm-hmm. right? Just say it the way that it is. I don't know if you could try too hard. Boy, I totally agree with that. Yet we all know in the game of baseball, are you gripping that bat? You can actually put too much pressure on yourself, maybe, right?
I've been in the valley.
That's right.
You ain't been up off that porch now.
Exactly, Mason.
And you know, and at least with Mad Bum, he has been down in the valley. And he had one of the three greatest seasons ever with his performance in a Game 7 of a World Series and the things he's done. So he's been there. But, boy, whenever you needed a performance from your major players, it was yesterday from Mad Bum and today from Robbie Ray. And unfortunately, it just doesn't feel like we're going to get him.
No, it does not. I mean, you stop and think about it. 4 1/3 innings pitched for Madison Bumgarner on 83 pitches, 7 hits, 2 base on balls, 7 earned runs, given up 2 home runs. He's got an ERA over 7. It just, wow. Mm-hmm. This is bad right now, right? I mean, your best players have got to be the guys that play their best in big games. And I thought yesterday, I'm sorry, I know it's ridiculous. It's 3-7. You go into the game yesterday, 3-7. But I thought yesterday was a big game. The game you want to race holding the ball. And he dropped it.
Well, the huge point there, Wolf, is it also has to do with who you're going up against. You know, when you're going up against, God bless me. Sorry about
goodness,
that. Boy, did that come out of nowhere.
When, bro.
Hey, don't worry. By the way, I'm healthy before anybody asks.
Yeah, right.
When you look at when you look at a rookie in his second start, where's the offense? I mean, this is something that we were on all year last year, is it wasn't because you were losing to the best pitchers in the game. There were so many times last year where pitchers are coming into games with 4 and 5 and 6 ERAs, where pitchers just got shelled in their last 3 outings in a row, and they come to the Diamondbacks or come against the Diamondbacks, and they get right. Pitchers were getting right by going against the Diamondbacks. So the rest of baseball has a plan that pitcher can't overcome, and the Diamondbacks don't. And now you see another situation where a rookie pitcher comes up against a veteran group of hitters and dominates them. Listen, when you sign a big contract and you're an ace and you're a borderline Hall of Famer, you deserve any negative that people are saying about Mad Bum right now. I'm not getting in the way of any of you that are upset at Mad Bum right now. But if that's the sole part of your focus, it's not the sole part of Torrey Lovello's focus. He just proved it by yanking 5 guys out of the lineup yesterday.
More on this as the show unfolds.
Man, there's a lot of fire there. Mike Hazen joining us today at 8:45. Hopefully he's got answers to be able to get this thing fixed. Coming up next, we do have one thing that we just feel outstanding about that'll make you feel very, very, very good about everything involved with...
Out to Booker. 5 seconds, 4 seconds. Booker on the drive. Goes up. Here's the shot. Shoot!
Booker! That's next on 98.7 FM. They're 3-0 in the bubble! Arizona Sports Station. I tell you, boy, did you need it? I mean, how much did you need that for the Phoenix Suns when you've got Coyotes down 4-0 and after the first 2 minutes just look terrible? Mad Bum gets blown up. The offense is still dead. The manager pulls the team. Marcus Gilbert says no thank you and opts out, so you've got a different situation at right tackle. There was just news all over the place that didn't feel great until... There's still 20 more seconds of this audio from the Suns locker room.
Boy, that loud. That was Monty, too. That loud one you heard right there.
And then he said, I don't need to say anything. Bring it in.
That's right. And then the whoa. Man, I'll tell you what. The Suns are fire, Basinonians. They just beat one of the best teams in the association. They competed, gave what they had, baby. They focused on the process of competing and let the chips fall where they may. And it was enough. Mm-hmm. Incredible. And what a growth game, too. This is a growth game. Are you kidding me, Cam Johnson? Grow strong, Grasshopper. Are you kidding me, Mikal Bridges? Grow strong. Devin Booker, the undisputed leader of this team, grow strong. Not just locally, nationally. Grow strong.
I realize some of you might feel like I don't care about, you know, whether or not Booker grows nationally, but then as soon as you see a power ranking you don't like, you get all bent out of shape about disrespect. To me, the national point of view is a huge point of this, and it's sad that it's a major point, because the last two games have been some of the worst officiated games I've ever seen. It is amazing to me how little the NBA cares about accountability and fixing their problems, officiating-wise. And Adam Silver, I know you don't care about one Phoenix talk show host and what does he think, but it's an embarrassment to the game how little you guys put into officiating. And I know if you hear this, there's somebody in a league office losing their mind right now. Do you know we do this? Do you know we do that? And whatever it is you're doing, it's wrong. You're not good at your job the way that you lead. If officials actually think those are good calls, then you're teaching them terribly. And if you're telling them those are bad calls and they're doing it anyway, you're hiring the wrong people. And the reason why I bring that up is because the Suns won the last two games anyway. I mean, I'm not saying it's rigged, jokes like that. I'm not saying they're trying to keep the Suns out of the playoffs. I don't think the referees lack integrity and they're trying to be terrible, but they're terrible. And the Suns aren't letting it affect them. They're mad. You see them yelling at the refs and stuff like that. But when Booker has a game like that, against a team like that, against individual players like that, and it's now one of the major topics of the bubble, you have to assume referees get that same opinion, get that same knowledge. They feel the way everybody else is talking about Devin Booker, and maybe the calls will actually even out to be correct in the next five games.
Devin Booker played the best game of his career, in my opinion. The best game of his career. I'm big on context. This was a game that actually meant something. Against a team that is an excellent team, one of the best teams in the association, one of the best defensive teams, if not the best defensive team in the association, scored 35 points against one of the best defensive teams in the league, against some of the best defenders in the game, hit critical shots, including the game winner. And he got fouled on the shot, Paul George. He played tough defense as well. He distributed the ball to his teammates. He played in a game that meant something in regard to the postseason, and his team won on his shot. Hello, Devin Booker. Mm. Hello, world. And I loved his reaction, based on his. Did you not love his reaction? Nothing.
It was when he hit the ground and then laid his head on the court. I've never seen a reaction like that, because I realize there's the argument. I don't think you're arguing, but the point that you're making of it's because he has that level of confidence that it's just, you know, okay, I knew I could do this. But to me, there was also a sense of he's that relieved. I felt like there was relief.
No doubt.
That it was, I have been carrying this burden. for so long. And I think for the first time in his career, when that shot went in, it was like, I am truly playing on something special. I'm truly playing in a situation where we can do something. I don't think they're going to the playoffs still. Okay, as fantastic as that was, math doesn't lie. I don't think they're going to the playoffs. I truly believe for the first time in Devin Booker's career, he believes he's going to the playoffs. And I think that's all that matters.
Based on these, you remember when Damian Lillard hit that game winner in the playoffs that beat the Thunder last year? You remember
when he stared at the camera?
Remember the look on Dame's face? That was so awesome, man. It really, he had this matter-of-fact look on his face.
Like, why are you surprised?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what Devin Booker did to me. Was there relief? Yeah, I believe it. But he wasn't celebrating.
Yeah.
He wasn't surprised. He didn't smile. He acted like he'd been there before. He was stone cold, baby. Stone cold Devin Booker, the cornerstone of Planet Purple going forward.
Monty Williams?
We played against a team that possibly could win a championship, and they sent everything at us with George and Kawhi and physicality, and our guys, you know, took it. And we put ourselves in a position to get a win, and it's an amazing feeling. And yet, you know, I'm already turning the page. I'm getting ready for the next game, and that's the mentality we have to have.
The most impressive thing about the game, Basin Orleans, to me, other than the win, of course, was the third quarter. You knew the Clippers were going to come out in the second half and apply that lockdown defense, right? The intensity was going to get turned up, and it was. To me, the third quarter was going to be the passepartout for the Suns' chances of winning this game. It was going to be the key that unlocked all doors for the Phoenix Suns, that third quarter. And even though they got outscored in that third quarter, they still had the lead after three. They had the lead after the first, after the second, after the third, and after the fourth. Paul George was all over Devin Booker in that third quarter. It was unbelievable. Grabbing him, got away with so many fouls on D-Book. It's mind-numbing to me. The incredible effort by this team, and Devin Booker in particular. This is what Orlando was all about to me. This is exactly what has come to fruition right now for the Suns. This is the best thing possible. Listen, if they get into the postseason, that's going to be fantastic as well. No doubt about that. But listen, make no mistake about it. It is the growth over these eight games going into next year that I'm so jacked up about. The growth of these young players to say, we can do this.
We know that coming into every night. We say that, you know, amongst the team, you know, that we still have to earn respect in this league. And we're not going to get, you know, every call out here until we do so. I said after the Dallas win, I think wins like this are important for us, you know, to gain that respect in this league. I think right now a lot of people are just looking at us as the 22nd or 21st team in the bubble, or, you know, we're just here to be here. But that's not the mentality we have as a team. We're here to win. Every time we step on the floor, we're here to compete, make a name for ourselves. And we're seeing a common theme, everything I'm saying. You know, we're approaching every game with the right mindset.
How well did the Suns play against one of the best defensive teams in the league, Doug Lease? Mm-hmm. How well? Think about it. They shot 47% from the field, 53% from beyond the arc. They only turned the ball over eight times.
That's what's crazy.
Eight times. They were +3 on the intensity index, right? +3 in blocks, steals, and offensive rebounds. They outplayed one of the toughest teams in the league. Man, I'll tell you.
And then how did they handle it after the game? Monty, you know, what do you think of your playoff chances now?
Our next thought process is tomorrow's film session.
Oh, okay.
That's it. Enjoy the process.
Yeah.
Enjoy the ride.
Only way to put it, that was fun. That was fun in a city that needed some fun right there. Coming up next. Wow. It hurts to ask. Were we wrong? Was it unfair to put that high of an expectation on the new Diamondbacks ace, Mad Bum? It's coming up on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We brought Paul Calvisi in to join Wolf, Bear, and Maloney. He's not in the Oxygen Community Studios, but We assigned Paul a job this morning, and now Paul has come back. He's had an hour and a half to prepare this report, so you as a fan can feel good about the Arizona Diamondbacks and the way the season has started. Math translation, they are 8-21 on the season as they wrap up April and go into May. So, Paul, what's your report say? What are the Diamondbacks doing well? Go positive.
Well, I'll tell you this much. I do like the fact that Torey Lovello has zero tolerance, that he is feeling the urgency at this point, that he's not going to get the production, the results, the intensity, whatever you want to call it, out of his guys. Then he's going to put new guys out there. That was the equivalent to me of a basketball coach pulling all five guys off the floor.
I felt the same way.
And checking in five different guys. That's what it looked like to me. And we'll see if it matters. You know, the worst case scenario to me, guys, is it sort of reminds me of the state of the Arizona Cardinals between Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer, where guys look around and they go, man, do we have the quarterback to win? And if we get down, do we have the ability to come back? And as we all know players. They know the guys around them. Do the D-backs truly have the starting pitching they need? They thought they did, but after we saw Mad Bum, and if the other guys are looking at themselves saying, we've got an ace who averages 88 miles per hour, and we're playing teams who just hit two home runs in their first five at-bats, and we've got two home runs in 11 games.
Yeah.
And if guys are wondering, do we have the firepower in all aspects of this game? Our defense is there, but not much else. And I keep going back to the comment made 2 days ago. And if you guys want to play it, I just sent it in. And this is from Torey Lovello, and it's what he said in response to the D-backs' slow start.
You know, this team, I think, hopefully the more baseball that they play, the better they're going to get. I firmly believe that, but it's not going to happen by accident. We're going to have to work at it, and we're going to have to believe that it's going to happen for us. But I just think we got sucker punched by a very good San Diego Padre team, and we've had a tough time recovering from that.
What does that mean? You got sucker punched? Does that mean this team isn't mentally tough enough? Does that mean that sucker punched, it was sort of a reality check? That in San Diego, they realized, wow, first off, the Padres are a lot better than we thought. They haven't had a winning record in a decade. That's going to change as the Padres took out the Dodgers the other day as well. But more to the point, maybe the D-backs got to look at their own starting pitching and said, akin to the Cardinals going to Seattle with Max Hall at quarterback and losing 58-0, and saying, man, do we have enough to win?
Yeah, Steve Gilbert was talking about that yesterday, Paulie. He thought it was just a metaphor Torey was using for getting our face kicked in. You know what I mean? Like, the Padres just served us some humble pie. Because to me, I thought the same thing. Like, sucker punched? Have you ever been sucker punched, Paulie? Oh, let's see, bottle over the head? Yes, you have been sucker punched, as a matter of fact. You know it, Paul.
Play the lie detector buzzer.
You know it, Paul.
Just turn on the lie detector.
Be sucker punched, right? You weren't expecting it. That's exactly what a sucker punch is. You weren't expecting it, and then you got punched. Steve Gilbert was saying yesterday that he thought it was just a metaphor that Torey was using for just getting whacked in every way, shape, and form.
You know, the question that is always asked in these situations or poll questions, you know, what are you most concerned about? What's the biggest problem? I don't even know what the biggest problem is. There are so many problems right now. How do you narrow it down? I mean, even in one day, here is Torey Lovello talking to Burns and Gambo. So this is hours before first pitch. About Mad Bum's lowered velocity.
We can go back just whatever, you know, however many months ago, 5-6 months ago when we started the original camp, he was 90-91 and exactly where we wanted him to be. I just think his body is conditioned to certain things, and it's going to be a little bit of a slower increase in velo, but he can pitch at anything. For me, he could pitch at 88, 90, 93.
So he's looking at it saying it's got to be the restart because he was just right there a couple months ago. So his body is just adjusting. And then just hours later, now it's, okay, what was different about Mad Bum?
Yeah, I just think there were a couple key counts, couple key at-bats where He didn't make the pitch at the right time. And I know there was a couple hit batters and with certain expectations that he's given us and big outs that he's gotten, you know, we thought that he was going to be able to get some outs at the bottom of the lineup, which he didn't. So I think if I were to add everything up, you know, they've got some really good hitters that are going to do some damage.
I'm wondering, especially with those hit batters, a lot of people are going to laugh at this. That pitch, the pitches that he hit three guys with are pitches I've seen right-handed batters swing at. And if you don't have the velocity on your fastball, you don't have guys getting fooled as much by that slider. The slider is still awesome. But if it's not being thrown off of a 91, 92-mile-an-hour fastball, it is so much easier to stay away from as a hitter.
And if he's not hitting his spots, if he's hitting batters instead of his spots with some of the breaking balls, they're treating Madison Bumgarner right now, from what I can tell, like they treated Archie Bradley middle of last season. They're just waiting for the fastball. They're just sitting dead red fastball. They're like, yeah, I don't really have to worry about what else is in his arsenal and his repertoire because he's not going to throw a strike with the other pitches. I'm just going to sit on 88 to 89 miles an hour. And you saw what Jose Altuve did, a guy who was in a massive slump. He just swung from the heels. He's just waiting for it, and boom, it was gone.
This guy is so similar to Zach Greinke, is it not? I mean, stop and think about it. Remember Zach Greinke. We are all having the same conversation about Zach Greinke and his velocity as well and the fact that it was tailing off. And that he had to learn how to pitch differently, and I think he definitely has. And I think the same thing applies to Madison Bumgarner.
It's funny you're saying that, Wolf, because I teased you earlier in the show about the comments of Bob Brenling, but that's exactly what he was talking about. And if you didn't get a chance to hear it, I think Bob Brenling is the best baseball play or color analyst there is. So it's so funny to tease him about what he said. But now that I'm going to play it for you being serious, they were having a conversation on the Fox Sports Arizona broadcast about the drop in velocity. And the reason why this is such a big deal, if you're just listening to it, is Mad Bum brought it up in the last start. Mad Bum brought it up of, I don't know why this is happening. It's something I've got to get right. So he's concerned about it. And as they discussed it, that was when Bob Brenly brought up Zach Greinke and said Zach Greinke struggled for a little bit getting used to pitching with lower velocity, but he figured it out. Mm-hmm. Great pitchers figured it out. And then he continued.
He's got good enough command. He knows how to use his pitches. He's got a game plan against every hitter. The lack of velocity, I think, will be offset by his command, the ability to put the pitches where he wants.
That makes sense.
Oh! Didn't want to get that one there to Correa. Altuve homered in the first, and now Correa in the second, and it's 2-0 Houston.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, deal with that one.
Yeah. Sports is the original reality TV, and you just got a reality check right there. It's happened to everyone behind the mic during a game. There's no doubt about that. However, we were talking about this after the season opener, where – wait a minute. Okay, the Diamondbacks traded away an ace who averaged 88 to 90 miles an hour with his fastball for another ace who throws 88 to 90 miles an hour, 5 years, $85 million. Are we sure the D-backs figured this was the Madison Bumgarner they were getting? I just wonder if there's a little bit of shock from the personnel decision makers saying, man, is this the guy we really thought we were signing? Because I tell you what, there looks to be some shock on the face of Mad Bum himself that he can't get over 90 miles an hour with a fastball.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to go over. You're an hour away from hearing the general manager address it directly. Mike Hazen, Diamondbacks general manager today, joining the Doug and Wolf show at 8:45 to talk about the 3-8 Arizona Diamondbacks and where their expectations were 2 weeks ago and try to figure out what in the world has happened and how is it going to get any better. That's coming up at 8:45 today. Up next, that final possession looked terrible. They didn't get the ball back into D-Book's hands. Coach, you gotta call a timeout.
I just told him, you know, I was, you know.
You were what? Well, it worked. It's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Oh, never mind. Everything just crashed. And now it's back.
All right.
Rebound, Zubats. He loses it. Suns get it back to Rubio. Time. 6 seconds left in the game. Out to Booker. 5 seconds. 4 seconds. Booker on the drive. Goes up. Here's the shot. Shoot! He got it. He got it. He got it. and the Suns win the game. Devin Booker at the buzzer puts it up and puts it in.
You can't will yourself to win, but you can will yourself to be prepared and give all that you are, all that you have, and that's what this team did. And that's why I'm proud to be a Suns fan. Not because they beat the Clippers, but because they were prepared to be competitive in three straight games in Orlando. When you're not as talented as your opponent, but you make up for that deficit by competing harder, you got my respect, brother.
And boy, does it say a lot about the people that are on the team, the individuals, and Monty Williams is the coach, that they didn't try to turn it on against Washington. Quarter number one of the quote-unquote summer scrimmages in the bubble, they had it on. They had a bad second half in the last scrimmage where you can kind of understand, all right, we've done all we can, the intensity's off. They came to Orlando with a true purpose, and it showed they were ready to play against Washington, and they have not let up at all. And, boy, was this an interesting statement by Monty Williams. And sometimes there are decisions you make that I think can lose you battles and possibly win you wars. I thought Monty Williams made a terrible mistake at the end of that game. Devin Booker got trapped, and he got rid of the ball. And I understand why. But he didn't do the Michael Jordan chase the ball. Give me back the ball. And everybody on the court knows the ball goes to him. And it ended up with a really bad Ricky Rubio shot. It was not a good offensive possession. And then Zubac throws the ball away, scramble for the ball. Booker gets it back and scores. And I remember, okay, I had to calm down from the excitement of what he just did. But I was one of the people in the living room yelling, call a timeout! Call a timeout! I mean, to me, he had to get a timeout there. And is there any chance he was deciding, you know what? I need to let these guys, I hate to say it, let them possibly lose or go to overtime. Maybe if they're down by a point, he calls a timeout. But he might be saying, you know what? Maybe we should have to go to overtime. And listen to what he said after the game.
I just told him, you know, I was, you know, that close to calling a timeout. But in those situations, I have to trust him. And I have to trust, you know, the decisions he makes in those situations. I know he wants the shot, and our guys just grew up tonight.
Wow.
Yes, just grew up tonight. See, that to me is so important. This is what
our
Orlando
guys
was
grew up tonight.
This is what Orlando was all about. This is it right here to me. The Suns getting into the postseason was such a long shot. Getting in, right? It's just a long shot. The fact they were actually there and had eight games to say goodbye to the season, say goodbye to this season, and maybe get better in those eight games. The fact they won all three of those games is a testament to this team getting better. You don't learn how to win, Basinonians. You learn how to compete. You learn how to compete in critical moments. And if the guy next to you does it, and the guy next to him does it, and the next guy, you're going to win. Learn how to compete like madmen, and then watch your talent win games. And that's what's happening in Orlando, in my opinion.
It was interesting. After the game, Booker was asked a kind of a deep question. And that is, with the fact that it's the Clippers, the fact that it's East Coast, the fact that it's a buzzer beater, the fact that you are Devin Booker and starting to get attention, the fact you're in the bubble and everybody's looking, do you acknowledge how huge that shot was above just, hey, you won an NBA game?
No. You know, every game's a new opportunity.
I mean, how about that? Yeah. I mean, this, look at all the, listen, I disagree with him. The hype of that moment is important because I think referees will finally start making better calls because they're forced to respect you. I think it is huge because it justifies why the Suns were there. And I bet you it had a lot to do with the new arena. A lot of people are going to say, what? If you look at the standings, there's no reason for the Suns to be there. If you look at the last decade of Suns basketball, there's no reason for the Suns to be there. I bet you somebody in the Suns organization begged Adam Silver and said, give us 8 games to promote our arena. If you drop the bombshell on ESPN.com about how frustrated the league is with how bad the Suns have been, give me this opportunity to promote this arena. I think that that's why the Suns are here, in my opinion. It's not to get to the playoffs. And suddenly, with everything that's going on, you justified everything? That shot is huge, Book. Do you acknowledge how enormous that was for your career, your team, your organization, and your city?
No.
Because he just plays basketball.
Yeah.
I love it.
No,
I love it.
It's exactly
every
right.
Game is a new opportunity for us to get better. And we have end goals as this team. You know, I have personal goals for this team that I want to reach. I want a reputation in this league as being a winner. Through 5 years, you know, I haven't got to that part of my career yet. But I'm work extremely hard as I can, you know, to get there. And I feel like we have a really good bunch to do it. A lot of guys in this locker room are locked in at all times and approaching the game with the right mindset. So, you know, that's all we can ask for.
So I wonder what Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy are going to say the next podcast. I mean, right? Stop and think about it. This is what D-Book is kind of alluding to as well. It's the NBA profile. Mm-hmm. Listen, one of the things that really got me so jacked up about being in Orlando is you weren't one of the 8 teams that were outside of Orlando. Right? I've talked about that many, many times. We have, as a matter of fact. The fact they got invited down there had to make you feel like we are in the league.
Yeah.
This is real. This is real. We're in the league. We're getting the opportunity to go to, I don't care if they were the last team into the league. They were getting the opportunity to go down to Orlando with the rest of the NBA, with the best players in the world, and go and compete in 8 games. That, to me, had to say something to these guys. And the NBA profile right now, this is going to increase Devin Booker's profile league-wide. Everybody's watching the bubble. The Suns are winning. He's coming off an all-star season, and he hit the shot that won the game, and Kawhi Leonard and Paul George were guarding him.
And how many times, Wolf, have you heard teammates or you've heard players, when they talk about winning, they'll say I, and when they talk about losing, they'll say we.
Sure.
And listen to that quote again from Devin Booker. Do you acknowledge the significance of the shot? No. And then he says, I want a reputation in this league as a winner. Okay, that's fine. But he says, I haven't gotten it. He's talking about losing. He's talking about all the losing in the 5 years he's been there. But he still says, I, about the losing.
Through 5 years, you know, I haven't got to that part of my career yet.
I mean, that's such a strong phrase to be able to say that. I don't agree with him. The losing has been little to do with him. Yet for him to say, I haven't gotten there, I haven't been labeled a winner, I haven't done enough, even though I've worked as hard as I could. I tell you, there are so many signs of this guy being special that even we miss around here. And last night was special.
Yeah.
And as Eddie Johnson said at the end of the Fox Sports Arizona broadcast, if you didn't know, now you know.
Yes. And can I also say this right now, just seeing some of the other young guys grow the way they are. Mikal Bridges made the play of the game. He did. I mean, this is it. You've got to look at it. Mikal Bridges is going to be a great two-way player for the Suns. Ron Wolfley predicting. There's your prediction, Mel. Right there. Mikal Bridges is going to be a great two-way player for the Suns. With the score 115-115, Rubio threw that shot up and missed. Zubats came down with a rebound with 11 seconds to go, tried to hit the outlet. What happened? Mikal Bridges deflected the ball. It was huge.
Yeah.
He deflected the ball. He put his hands up, got his long arms out there, his praying mantis arms, and stabbed the ball, knocked it down. Suddenly the Suns had it, and D-Book hit the game winner.
Because remember, after a missed shot, if Jason Richardson pays attention, the Suns go to the NBA Finals.
Exactly.
Stop and now Mikal Bridges is still engaged after a missed shot.
Still engaged, did not quit on the play.
Big point. The only negative about the bubble, one negative, and that is the bubble MVP is T.J. Warren.
Yeah, right. Light it up.
Yeah, that's the only one.
Don't
coming up
back,
next.
Look forward.
Cardinals just had their starting right tackle opt out for 2020. Who's going to take his place? Let's talk to our starting left tackle, Max Starks, on the Doug and Wolf Show next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.